Welcome to Exploring Axon, a podcast where we discuss Axon Framework, Axon Server, and their ecosystem. I am your host and the producer of this podcast, Sarah Torrey. In this episode, I spoke with my guest, Josh Long, the developer advocate at Spring. We talked about his background and how he started with Spring and about the Spring community. We also talked about the Spring Axon auto-configuration that he wrote with Allard Bowser, as well as the development of CQRS and DDD amongst the various communities and how that has been in the past decade or so. Josh will be our keynote speaker this year at our conference on September 28th in Amsterdam. I do hope you can all join us. Now let's have a listen. Hi, Josh. Welcome to the show, and thank you so much for joining me. I'm sure a lot of our listeners already know you, but for those who may not know you, could you please introduce yourself and tell me a little bit about your background?
Sure. Hi, my name is Josh Long. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I appreciate it. What else? I work on the Spring team as a Spring developer advocate, and I have since 2010.
Awesome. Can you take me a little bit before 2010 and tell me a little bit about what you were up to before your Spring days? Or maybe there was no before Spring Day.
I've been working since 2002 as an engineer, and I worked at a lot of startups. And these startups were, you know, you don't get to be a specialist at a lot of startups. You really have to just sort of, you know, if the light goes out, you fix the light, right? Like, it's simple. If somebody phones in, guess who gets to answer the phone, you know? And so I worked at a number of different startups, and I even started one of my own. It didn't go well, but it did humble me, and it taught me a lot of lessons about software. Yeah, school of hard knocks, as they say. And it was just kind of interesting. At the time, I was trying to build software to do a number of different things, and the process by which people were accustomed to building software at the time was around something, at least in the JVM, it was around something called J2EE, which was untenable, right? It was not actually a viable approach, and particularly EJB, right? At the time, this is, again, 20 odd years ago. Now things are far-sight more useful, more productive there, but certainly 21 years ago, it was painful. And it was so painful, in fact, I don't know of any other place where this is true, but there were at least three different books whose whole raison d'etre was to decry the terrible state of J2EE at the time. So imagine, like, you know how hard it is to get the inspiration to write the great American novel or whatever? Like, can you imagine having that spark lit sheerly by your distaste for a technology that had so ruined your time and prospects and ambitions that you thought it best to put pen to paper just to speak ill of it?
Write a book about it.
Yeah, exactly. If you've written a book, you know, that's not something you do in a weekend unless you're Dr. Subramaniam, right? Dr. Venkat Subramaniam. That's like a year of your life and weekends and saying no to friends and all that. Can you imagine having to muster that much energy just to remind people not to do this, you know? Wow, yep. Golly, yep. It was a bad state. And I don't know that we've ever had anything like that. Like, so that was the state of things. And I didn't understand it. I couldn't make it work. EJB in particular, I couldn't make it work at the time. And I just felt like I'm not smart enough, you know? Maybe this is just not meant for me. Maybe I'll go off and just become a successful .NET developer, you know? Mm-hmm. Just seemed like such an easy thing to do.
Was it around that area where you kind of came across Spring?
Yeah, Spring was a technology that had just come out. Actually, we're fast approaching. We've already approached, by some reckoning, its 20th anniversary, right? It depends on how you think about it. If you look at, like, the very first lines of code that would become Spring, those were written in 2001
Okay, so we're past 20 years.
Yeah, yeah, already. Yeah. In some cases, yeah, very far from the past, right? And so, and then if you look at like the first GA, no, sorry, the first release candidate that was public and that looked like Spring, that we called Spring and that had the same package structure and all that, that was sometime 20 years ago this year, right? And if you look at like the first GA 1.0 release, that was 2004, right? So that one hasn't yet approached that. That'll be next year. But either way, 20 years of this technology being
hard to believe.
Yeah, yeah. Tell me about it. Yeah. And so I was starting to use it, right? It was the person who wrote Spring wrote it in illustrating a better way forward. He was one of those people that wrote a book all about the terrible state of J2EE, and unlike the other books, which were just interesting reads, but they didn't have a better way forward. They just knew that this was not something you should be doing. Rod came up with this technology, some sketch code that illustrated perhaps a better way forward to address a lot of the problems that people were going to experience, and that sample code published in that book would then become Spring.
Oh, wow.
So we wrote the documentation first and the code second, right?
Right, right.
Which is not how most people do it. And that code was out there on the internet. I had bought the book. I hate to use this word, but I was an adherent to the ideas espoused in the book. And I loved the code. And then, of course, other people did as well. And that code would then get massaged into what we know of as Spring, right? So that was, the book came out, what, 2001, 2002, something like that?
Mm-hmm.
And, maybe 2002. And then the code looked like Spring about a year later.
Right.
And so I was already starting to use it, really early access, really early days, but it was already a far sight more useful than what we had. By the time 1.0 rolled around, there was just so much utility in it, even if I couldn't use the whole thing, if I couldn't cut over wholesale to it. So I just found myself a big fan. That's 2000s, early 2000s. Fast forward, another 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years. I've gone through a string of startups, some more fun than others. And remember, this is in the wake of the dot-com bust.
Yeah, exactly.
In 2001.
Right.
And so very interesting. I mean, I didn't appreciate it. Yeah. To start my career then, I didn't appreciate it at the time, but it was very...
Now you can kind of look back and put some puzzle pieces together. I'm like, okay, actually, they all happened together. So then So you found this a better tool, basically, a better way of doing things, mm-hmm. and then you started contributing to it because it was open source and you could contribute to it. Is that how you started with Spring? Mm-hmm. Okay.
With open source, but all my I would say there was a huge gap between when I found Spring and when I first started contributing.
Yeah.
And
okay.
I often think about that. What if I had started contributing much earlier, right? And maybe I would have been, part of the earlier wave of waves of employees, or whatever. I was a huge fan, and being honest, it was there was already so much there for me to like take in and learn and appreciate and introduce into my organizations that it was like I they could do no wrong. There was no bugs that I needed to fix. There was no issues I had outstanding. I was just trying to get a chance to use what they were already offering.
Is that why the gap was between the time that you started using it until the time that you started contributing? Because you were busy with other projects and startups and so on, and you were kind of grasping this code that was coming at you, and then had a chance to see the bugs finally once the went away, and you're like, oh, there are some bugs here, and I can contribute. Is that what happened, or
sort of? I mean, it's Spring integration was the reason I got because that was a brand new project about which I had some familiarity, the ecosystem of which I had some familiarity. When Spring first came out, this is the other thing is as you know, so much of introducing a technology is education, not just around the technology, but around the motivations for that technology. Yep. And so when Spring first came out, they had a team of engineers, but these aren't just, sitting in the basement banging out code. Engineers. These are get dressed up and go to a conference and stand in front of an audience of 1,000 people and try to win the war of ideas, right? You can't just say this is the best code in isolation and then just be malcontent when people aren't flocking to you. You have to educate people as to why this works and what the underpinnings of it are. So they were very good about that. The spring team were 60% engineers, say, and 40% advocates. Mm-hmm. They were willing to engage in the conversation. You can't win if you don't play, right? And so they were always in the conversation. Win, lose, or draw, at least they went out and tried, you know, to help people find common ground with their ideas. And so I was learning the ideas they were espousing. A lot of that stuff that was in spring, the reason they had to do education was because a lot of that stuff was drawn from academia.
Right.
They had taken things that we didn't have from and drawn it from academia and said, look, these ideas could actually make it a lot easier for us to build enterprise applications today. Certainly a far sight easier compared to whatever the distinguished competition was proposing, right? And so there was a lot of like, hey, like this is a new thing. It's a new idea. It's a new pattern. Here's how we do it with our technology. But even if you learn nothing else, we're all better for you having learned the pattern, right? Even if you don't use our technology to implement it. So by the time spring integration came around, I was like, okay, I'm not learning the patterns here. I already get them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm learning this particular technology,
right.
But I was already on a level playing field. I understood the patterns already from my background there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had the ability to contribute. Whereas with Spring Framework itself, there were so many new patterns. I was just learning the patterns first. I didn't understand. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. So you have to go through the learning curve and then be able to then have a say about it or contribute to it. But
right.
Yeah,
I wasn't an expert enough to authority on the domain.
And then once you started contributing, how did that path go for you after that?
Great for me, terrible for the spring team. Like,
because they got annoyed by all of your contribution.
Oh, just my terrible, terrible code. Yeah, like they were great. I truly the greatest group of people. I love the spring team. I love them so much because they're all. I mean, first of all, some inside baseball here. Very few people leave the spring team. I mean, it's like one every 5 years or something like that. It's just, it never happens, right? Mm-hmm. People do not leave the spring team. We love each other. We love the team. We love the work
That's
we're
awesome.
Doing. We love the mission. We love all of that. I don't know what the official numbers are for people leaving, but it's just exceedingly rare.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a result, and also, you know, the spring team was built on, we just want the best people.
Yep.
It was never like, oh, we've got an office in Dubuque. We need to get engineers local to, it was just never that.
Yeah.
It was, hey, if you're working, if you can solve a problem in the open source and you're out there, we'll find a way to hire you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It didn't matter where you were. So we are the most geographically distributed team as well. There is no like single place where you can go to meet the plurality or majority of the spring team. No single office you can check into.
Gotcha.
And then also because we're so rarely leave. I mean, in fact, if anything, people retire before they leave.
Yeah.
Because we so rarely leave, what you have is a group of people, most of whom are super senior. We're very top heavy. We have a lot of senior people because, of course, they are. We've mentored them. We've grown them into top tier people. So, and I'm one of the younger members of the team.
Yeah.
And I've been here for 12 years now, you know, 13 years almost.
13 years, well.
You know, I'm still one of the, and there's people that were there for 5, 6, 8 years before me, you know, they're still there. So that team, that's an amazing dynamic, you know, in Silicon Valley, if you tell somebody you work for the same company for 13 years, they think you're
that's unheard of.
Phantom. Yeah, exactly. I mean,
most companies don't last that long. Right?
No, exactly. I mean, how many software companies have come and gone in that time or been acquired or whatever.
Right.
The spring team is something else. It's a different quantity. So I knew, and by the way, there's also people on the spring team that are like I don't know if people appreciate this, but a lot of these people don't need to be here, you know, like monetarily, they're already fine. They could go do whatever they wanted. And they've been here for decades, you know,
but they want to be there, which is nice.
They want to be there. Exactly. Like I just love this team. There's like, these are all people that could get better pay anywhere else, I guarantee you. And yet we just sort of stick together. So I wanted to work with the illustrious spring team because I wanted to work with the people that were building this thing that I'd come to appreciate that had saved my bacon time and time again.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't really understand until I got into it that, like, this is the best group of people.
That's awesome.
Ever. I mean, just ever. I've never been so more grateful to have this team. And even, you know, management-wise and all that, you just have this, like, again, it's very hard to manage. It's very sort of people, when you got people that are all that high and senior, mm-hmm. and that are all like kind of self-starters and working at open source anyway, it's not like you're micromanaging. It's not like you're checking.
It's not your typical kind of management. Yeah, absolutely.
Not even. Yeah. So for me, that process was amazing, you know, but because it's such a good environment, I've just stuck around, and I'm sure some of the people on the team are like ruining the day that Fisher extended me that offer, you know.
But then go ahead. You were going to say.
Oh, I was going to say, Mark Fisher, he hired me. He offered me the job, right? Mm-hmm. He said, hey, we've got this new thing called developer advocacy.
That was my next question, how you got into the advocacy part. Yeah.
Right. And he said, we've got this new thing, a new job for something called a developer advocate. Would you be interested in that? You'd be our first spring developer advocate. And I'm I didn't know what that was. And I was like, wait, is that James Ward?
Right.
Do you know James Ward? James Ward is like,
I
don't know. He's one of the all-time Double Dutch best, most, you know, intelligent and amazing advocates out there. And at the time he was working at Adobe. He since has gone on to work at Heroku. Mm-hmm. Heroku, Salesforce, Google. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, I don't know if I could do what he's doing.
Yeah.
Beg your pardon. I don't know if I could do what he's doing. That's not me. I had seen him on stage, right? Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, that's fine. So I actually politely said, nah, thanks, but no thanks, you know?
Yeah.
And I walked away. Got five minutes away, you know, walked away from my desk at the office, and I was going to the canteen to get some coffee. And I thought, what did I just do? What am I saying? Of course I'll take it. What? That's the spring team. I'll figure it out. Just say yes.
I'll take whatever.
I came back and said, I'll take it. What am I saying, you know? Stupidest 5 minutes of my life. I have no idea. Maybe, I was going to get coffee. I was clearly in my before coffee mode, right? I needed that coffee.
Didn't you have a sign on your desk that said, don't talk to me before my morning coffee, something like that?
I should have, because I'm clearly inept, you know? it was, oh man. And the worst part is I had just joined a company, which was an amazing company in of itself. Had it been any other company that asked me, I would have told them to go pound sand. Like, I'm fine. I was happy at that company. That company was called Shopzilla in Los Angeles, and truly one of the best environments I'd ever been in. But up until that point, in fact, even now, I would say that the perks at Shopzilla were better than the perks at my current job, right? Just, you know, I just love the spring team, though, and I love the people, and I love, obviously, my, you know, I get paid.
That's
okay, you know, it's fine.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, it's all I'm trying to say is, but for spring, I would have still been at Shopzilla, probably. I was very happy there. You know?
No, that makes
I guess I'd ride a camel there.
And I think you, I would say you've done a really amazing thing for spring. I think the amount of education that you do for people on a daily basis, it's enormous. And you and I were just talking about traveling. I can't even imagine and picture the amount of traveling that you do to talk to other people and go to conferences and you know, just teach your technology to everybody else, and which is amazing. Actually, this is how you and I got to know each other, which was interesting because it was several years ago when I was learning about Spring Boot, and I posted a question. It was just out open to public on Twitter. I said, hey, I have this question about, I can't even remember what it was, Spring Boot related. And then you messaged me with an answer, and then you said, hey, if you have any other questions, you don't hesitate to reach out to me. And I remember it was like, I didn't know who you were at the time. And I think it was at the end of that day, or I still don't know who you are. But at some point I was talking to my husband. That's more philosophical. We should go back to that another time.
Right.
But
we're all learning.
I told my husband, I said, yeah, this is a very nice person on Twitter answered my question. His name is Josh. He goes, Josh who? I said, Josh Long. He goes, what? It's the Spring Developer Advocate. It's great. That's awesome. And then we continue the conversation. And so it's, I think the way that you handle all of these conversations and these questions, I don't even know how you handle it because there's so many, I'm assuming, that come your way, and you take the time to personally respond, and not just respond, but also to get to know people, which is amazing. So really, thank you for that.
That was great.
I mean,
of late, my inbox has been flooded with blue sky requests. So for those of you wondering, I don't have any. I don't have any invitations. Let me get back to my spring questions, please. Stop flooding my inbox.
Well, I don't know about other people, but I've never had a question not answered by you, probably within the first 20 to 48 hours, which is great. So yeah, really great for that.
Sometimes it can be bad. You might have got me when I was going through my weekly.
When you were at an airport or something.
I'm reliably terrible at answering questions, but sometimes I'll go through and just like, okay.
I think I've had good luck, which is great. Yeah, which is great.
Yeah.
So now coming to a bit more recent-ish years, I guess. Not so recent, because I want to take you back to 2010, I guess. So at that point, was shortly before the time you joined Spring, you were in InfoQ, and you had a conversation with Allart, our CTO, about... Yeah. CQRS and Axon framework. So your relationship with Axon kind of started at Axon's very early days as well.
Yeah.
I was curious, how did you, well, I guess several questions on that, but one at a time. How did you come to find out about CQRS and what it was, and why did you think it was useful in the first place?
I knew about CQR. What's the pattern that preceded? I knew about domain-driven design.
Yeah.
Eric Evans, he wrote that book in 2000 and,
three, four, I think it was.
A long time. Sure. Yeah, that one. And so I knew about the pattern. I knew basically the approach, and I just hadn't really seen it expanded to its logical conclusion. And then I had read some of Greg Young's work on some stock exchange. Was it the Canadian one, I think?
Yep.
With this pattern called CQRS. And, it had become part of the zeitgeist then. And I was also starting that company I just mentioned, they were doing, that was the first place I'd ever seen anybody do microservices.
Okay.
Truly do microservices, right? Not just SOA, not just, everything is redundant. No, it was truly a microservice architecture. And this is 2009, right? So really phenomenal engineering group. And it becomes sort of, you start to ask questions around, okay, well, if I've got 10 different microservices, each of which controls a part of the graph of data, then... first of all, how do I get a view of the data that shows the whole picture for a client? And then second of all, how do I make sure that everybody's in sync without actually resorting to something like distributed transactions, right? And the CQRS was the only pattern I saw. That, and then I would learn about Saga pattern, right? The Saga pattern around the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Those were the only two patterns I saw that even began to speak to that.
And Saga pattern in terms of not the processing pattern specifically, or you mean the orchestration part of it?
Orchestration, so,
yeah. Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
The protocol implied by the Saga pattern is useful, but more just because you can implement the protocol pretty easily yourself, right? It's fairly straightforward, I guess. But but just the idea of this patterning existing and being known to work okay for this particular use case was exciting for me because I didn't know how you would solve it otherwise.
But
it was just nice to have something. So CQRS gave me a way to think about moving data across different boundaries, and still having a efficient representation of the data for the client, a view of the data. And then I guess you'd call it query in CQRS, right? And then the Saga pattern gave me a way to think about long-lived multi-step sort of state. you know. Mm-hmm,
exactly.
And at the time, I was also working in workflow, which is another, and I was working in messaging, right? I love
right.
all this to do with messaging and event-driven architectures, all that stuff. I'm very much into, and that's my background, right? So,
yeah.
And CCards just sort of fit there.
Mm-hmm. And that's, was that then through your research that you found about Axon and Axon Framework at that point, or did you start basically writing your own, I guess, configuration or framework, if you would, or did you just use Axon Framework right off the bat?
I've never written my own CQRS framework.
Okay.
I suppose I have accidentally written my own Saga. I didn't know it at the time. I was working with workflow,
mm-hmm.
And workflow systems give you basically a Saga. They give you a state machine that if you line things up in the right way, give you the Saga pattern. But I had written my own workflow engine,
yep.
you know, a couple of them.
Yep.
So for CQRS, how did I hear about Axon? I don't even know. I suppose it must have been someone in the Spring team, because he's Allard was you know, there's a community of Spring folks. There was and still is a strong
mm-hmm.
community, but in particular in the early days, there's a strong community of folks from Dutch Spring.
Yep, Spring community. You know, yeah, yeah, exactly.
Community. Yeah. So he might have come from that.
Mm-hmm.
Group. I don't know how I first learned of him.
Yeah, very good. And I think you had a conversation with him early on through InfoQ about what the framework is and what it did and what it was good for and things like that. And I think that was probably, if not the first time, that you and him had a conversation about Axon. But then
I think it was because there was Spring integration in the original code or support for it or something. Maybe
I think
that's
what
it was.
So. I think so. I think that might have been the reason.
The crossing of the streams there. Yeah. Okay.
So then what? So since then, you obviously have kept a relationship with Axon Framework, and you have done some things with Allard, which I'll get to. Another one that's coming up, which we'll probably talk in another episode about that, but. Can we focus just a few minutes, or maybe more, if you want, about the Axon Spring auto configuration? Because you wrote that with Allard, and can you tell me about what it is first of all, and why did you guys decide to implement this into the framework? I know the obvious answers, but yeah, tell me.
Yeah, about. I mean, so Axon. Okay, so for people who are listening, Axon is delivered as a framework. There's several components. There's a server, which is separate from this discussion, but.
Yes.
All this time, when we've been talking about Axon, we've been talking about a framework that you can use to write code, and it's a component model that you can use to write code. And that's always been true. And that component model for Spring was always surfaced in, you know, I suppose there was a, I don't remember, but I suppose 12 years ago there would have been XML you know, some Spring integration adapters and
mm-hmm.
this kind of stuff, right? And eventually, you know, and the way this works is that the Axon framework has always been written at its core to be sort of agnostic of any one particular thing. Now,
yep.
practically speaking, you don't have to tell me one way or another, but I'm willing to bet 80% of that community is still using Axon in terms of Spring. So Axon's always been written in terms of this like generic core, and it had. The ingredients to build a component model with Spring were there.
Yep.
And then we released Spring Boot. The first, you know, not GA versions were in 2013. So that's another 10-year anniversary right there.
Mm-hmm.
We released it then, and we have this thing called auto configuration. So basically, you can have a jar in the class path, have a library in the class path, and just by having it there in a Spring application, in a Spring Boot application, everything in that jar that will get involved, it'll get invoked and be given a chance to contribute to the sort of running congealed application.
Mm-hmm.
And this is natural because it means that all that boilerplate, like gluing of components, of ingredients,
mm-hmm.
gets done for you. And so Axon had a fair bit of there's a recipe. There's a number of steps, and it's not because of Axon per se. It's just mm-hmm. because of there's no better way. All he could do is provide the ingredients with Axon and say, here, use spring to put them together in the shape of a cake,
yeah,
you know, that you want, right? So with Spring Boot, we had this new mechanism where we could just give you the cake instead,
mm-hmm,
directly, without compromising on flexibility for the developer. And so part of my, you know, part of the, one of the things I do all the time is I try my level-headed best to help ecosystem partners and community members and all that just take advantage of some of these amazing force multipliers, right? And
so we call them automagics.
Yeah, because it's you know, Spring is a framework for building frameworks at some point, you know, at some level. And it's really good at that. And so if you want to, like, find classes and provide annotations that get detected and, you know, control the life cycle of objects or the quantity of those objects, this is all stuff that Spring can do for you for free.
Yeah.
And Allard knows this, so he had already done some of it using the regular Spring support. Here comes Spring Boot, and I reached out to all of my friends in the community, and Allard, of course, was top of that list. And then also a few others, like Julien Dubois, who would take the stuff I showed him, throw away his existing prototype, and then create something, then create J-Hipster based on Spring Boot. And that was,
mm-hmm,
you know, that's just history. That became its own framework with its own huge community.
Yeah, yeah.
So I just do that. I just wanted to show
really
people
amazing
that I knew would appreciate it, this stuff. And Allard was, of course, you know, he's a brilliant human being. So we sat down. I don't remember when it, where it was, but we sat down and just started talking about it. And, you know, like, it's not like I had to explain for very long. You know, I did my normal stock standard, like, 1 hour pitch for him and some teammates. And, you know, I think it was like the next day or whatever, he'd come back and said, look, we did this. And I was like, ah, it's like so much better, you know, like, you know. And then maybe he and I sat down and wrote some code together as well at one point.
I think there was some pair programming session involved. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That sounds right. Cause I remember sitting in an office with him,
mm-hmm,
kind of like going, just cause we did this 80%, the 20% is always the 80% time. Right. So I helped him do the low hanging fruit so that it was, mm-hmm, like basically in the shape of autoconfig. And there were some like small things where it worked fine, but if he was willing to make some changes to the core, then this could be a million times more
effective,
elegant,
yep,
effective.
True.
Yeah. And so he did that because I know the CQRS pattern and I know Axon a fair bit, but I wasn't confident or qualified or competent enough to propose, let alone enact changes to the core of the code base. So he did that. And then we regrouped and it just came together really, really nicely, mostly because he's just brilliant and fast and,
thank you,
knows the stuff.
Right. So I think it's been a huge contributing factor to Axon framework itself as well, because it obviously makes things a lot easier for developers who just wants to get this framework and start working on it without having to worry about fiddling with the configuration or packaging things or what have you, right?
Yeah.
I love the blech part of it. So you are also working on something more recently. I think last year you guys started working on implementing Spring Native, but we will come back and talk, mm-hmm, about that a little bit later another time, because that I think deserves its own session. But going kind of back to the CQRS and those early days and your collaboration with Allard throughout the years through Axon framework as well, what do you think the development of just CQRS community or the usage of the pattern plus domain-driven design has been for the community? Do you think it's moved the direction that you had hoped for it to move since then? Or do you think that there's still a lot that developers can do with these patterns that is not being used to its fullest, so to speak?
Yes to both. But also, like,
it depends.
Because, well, I mean, certainly in the era of microservices, in the era of bounded context, separated now not just by a bounded context, but also by a network, a network barrier.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly in that new world, CQRS is more important than ever, and you've seen it proliferate more than ever. But that said, it's not nearly where I think it should be.
Should be.
Because it's such a useful pattern. And I think when people see it, when they get to, it's one of those things. It's like, it's just like with spring in the very beginning. You have to teach people the patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard. It's slow.
Yeah.
Slow work. But it, once people see it, they're like, oh, okay, I'm not doing it the other way ever again. It just makes so much more sense this way.
Do you think it's why it hasn't reached its full potential by this time? Do you think it's the learning aspect of it, the learning curve, or the mindset? What do you think?
Yeah, because you know, when we talk about microservices, the most loaded word in the English language at this point, talk about microservices in the last 10 years and cloud and all this stuff. And I there's been a whole lot of discussion, a whole lot of navel gazing around what the community should embrace as patterns for solving these kinds of problems. And some of that has actually gone sort of full circle, and it's gotten back to, okay, let's not do microservices. Let's go back to the monolith,
yeah.
But let's have well-structured monoliths. And mm-hmm. basically a well-structured monolith is CQRS,
right?
Like that's also very natural there. You can't by default, Axon is a well-structured monolith.
Yeah. That's what the framework does. Yeah. It just helps
it,
you
it happens
organize.
To work really nicely when you, yeah, exactly. It happens to work nicely when you distribute it with messaging, but by default it's just local and it works great. So I think the community was, they had an abundance of choice, too many options, too many patterns, too many approaches. Everyone and their mother espousing an idea for building the next microservice architecture. And we got all this, man, it's been a decade of just constant talk about
discussions
microservices.
About
and I did
this
that,
and that,
of course.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, and I think it's been a valuable conversation. I wouldn't change anything, I guess. But if you're, just pity the poor wayward developer just trying to get something shipped,
mm-hmm.
and they're being inundated with all these different, you know, trust me, this is the best way forward. No, trust me, you know, all these, what was that? It even became, what was that term? Thought Lord, it's a troll, right? Like it's a tech equivalent of an influencer, right? These
mm-hmm.
ridiculous thought lords that just pontificate on the state of architecture or whatever. It's just really hard to know where to go. And at some point, I think people are just happy to get like, here, I got a REST API up. Please, can I go home now? You know, like, am I done? And the answer is no, you're not done. It's not going to serve you. But yeah, you should go home. You know, obviously go home and relax.
Yep.
And people are just very happy to get anything at this point because it just seems so complicated. But I think it's hard to pierce that. I think it's going to be hard for good patterns, even something like CQRS and Axon in particular.
Mm.
It's going to be hard to pierce the morass.
But that's true what you mentioned about start with a well-structured monolith, because that's literally what we've been kind of advising others. If you want to adopt some of these patterns, just start with one thing that you can manage. Just make sure that, you know, you're organizing it in parts that, you know, that your business logic is sitting on one side, your data is separate. Just that way you can scale and reduce if you would whenever you need to. So that way you don't have to worry about everything, all of these microservices and systems all over the place, and you have to integrate them and orchestrate them and make sure that, you know, nothing falls apart and everything all of a sudden explodes. So absolutely. That makes sense. Now, to someone who is interested in using some of these patterns, and whether they are a seasoned developer, a newbie, or what have you, what, aside from start with a well-structured monolith, what would be some of your other suggestions? What kind of resources can folks kind of get their hands on or research, or just go ahead and do it maybe? I don't know. What would your recommendation be?
Oh.
I know I'm asking a loaded question because it's...
For getting started with what? For CQRS Axon-based projects?
For if you want to use, just going to the thought process of using something more organized, not putting everything under one monolith and hope for the best.
Oh. So I know this is going to sound, and I'm sure people will actually me on this, but the approach that I take is to make, as an exercise, I encourage people to take all their code, get rid of the word public.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right. And I call this the interfaces and events
mm-hmm.
approach. And so basically, if you have code and you've got Java code and you've got types that are public, because we're all used to everything being public in Java. And so we have these services that depend on types from different packages and so on. So what breaks if you make everything package private? So that it's not visible from another package
mm-hmm.
and it's not visible from a subclass. Most people will find a lot of bodies floating to the top of the water when they do that. Their compiler will just go blood red, right? And the reason is because you've got these tangles.
Mm-hmm.
You've got all this code being dependent on from other types. Spring doesn't care if your type is public or not,
mm-hmm.
right? It doesn't. You can put an annotation at component on a bean that is just
yep.
class foo, and it'll be just fine. So then the question is, okay, well, if everything is package private, how do I communicate across packages?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is you don't, unless there's an absolutely
good reason to
do it.
Yeah.
And it should be the exception. And so those things, those data types that you want to share between packages and those interfaces, put that at the root package.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
The implementations of those interfaces, put those in a particular sub-package and make them package private. So
mm-hmm.
class, you know, whatever, customer, JDBC customer service implements customer service, whatever, something like that. Okay, so now you've got data. These are things that can be shared between packages. But even there, you know, how do the services get the data, right? How does each thing that manages different bits of data, how do they get the data? And so then you start thinking, okay, well, I need to, when something happens over here, I need this other thing to be able to find out, but nothing in my interface is public. So how does this other thing find out? Easy. The other thing listens for events,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
So when something happens over here, post an event. Who gets the event? All the other services. They consume the event, which is that data, that command types,
right.
those event types in the core, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they can reconfigure their own state based on that event.
Right.
Okay. So now you've got only public data types or events,
mm-hmm.
right? And actually, when you start thinking about it, it's no longer data types; it's just events you're dealing
just
with.
Events. Yep.
And you've got an occasional interface for core stuff at the very, very root of the hierarchy.
Mm-hmm.
But even that, you want to, if you can, not do that, then great; it's even better.
Mm-hmm.
So you communicate changes with events. By publishing these event types,
mm-hmm.
which are public, you know, public types.
Yeah, yeah.
What about if I want to ask questions? If I want to view the data, that's where you get those interfaces.
Yeah.
That's a query. I mean, now I've got one interface at the root called, you know, to ask, I can read, I can
mm-hmm.
ask questions. And I need that. I can get a pointer to that in my code anywhere and ask those questions. Who's implementing that and how? We don't care. It's another bean somewhere deep in the package hierarchy that isn't public. And basically, what I just, if you go through that thought process, you kind of ended up at a hackneyed, half-implemented, bug-ridden version of CQRS.
CQRS, exactly. Right.
Yeah. And so, but it all starts with just make everything package private. What breaks? Why does it break?
Mm-hmm.
And you find out, okay, I have too many things across different packages that are talking to each other. How do I remove that? Great.
Yep.
Put them all in the same package. So in my code, all of, you know, I do a design by a function as opposed to role, right? So
yeah.
I'll put like customer controller, customer aggregate, customer repository, whatever, all in the same package called customers,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
right? I don't have foo.controllers. And then foo.services. And
yeah.
foo.aggregate. That's terrible. Don't do that. It's an anti-pattern brought, you know, it's a poison that came from the Ruby on Rails community.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't seem to shake it. And I've just undo that, unscrew that up, and your code will naturally morph into
right.
CQRS.
Exactly, makes sense.
Or it will eventually, but it'll take a long time. So I suggest you just study at Axon and just skip to the win.
Just go to the Axon documentation, and it will make your life
easier. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Start there.
Yeah, just,
thank you.
Yeah. But it's an interesting exercise. Really, I hope people will try it. Just get rid of the word public.
I think
your architecture will change.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really interesting idea, and kind of makes me want to go try it now. that's I'd never thought about it that way, but absolutely right. Makes sense. Fantastic, Josh. I think we talked about a lot of really good topics and, of course, more generalized than some specific things. And I do hope to come back and talk more about Spring Native another time, because that's definitely something that I'm really interested about finding more about. And I'm sure there are other people who want to learn more about it as well. So, but
the support for, so Spring Native, as you know, was a support for building GraalVM native images in Spring Boot 2.x. In 3.0, we have the Spring Boot 3 AOT engine, which is what we recommend people use instead of Spring Native. But yeah, I know you know the difference. Just I want people to know.
Yeah, absolutely. Don't use Spring Native. Don't Spring. No. Definitely.
But native images with Spring. It's just called a different thing.
Gotcha. Yeah. Perfect. So yes, we definitely have a conversation about it later. For now, thank you so much for joining me. I know you're super busy and I'm literally catching you in between travels. So I appreciate you making the time and talking to me today.
My pleasure, my friend. I appreciate you having me.
Of course. Until next time, safe travels. I hope you liked my talk with Josh. Please join me next time for other amazing conversations with wonderful guests. Until then, have a great time and happy coding.